Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Leo Laporte. Episode 48 for November 28, 2008. Open SUSE. This show is brought to you by listeners like you and your contributions. We couldn't do it without you. Thanks so much. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show that covers free, Libra, open source software. On the line with us right now, Mr. Randall Schwartz, the king of flossing. Hello, Randall.
Hey, Leo. Good to talk to you.
Welcome back from, I guess, well, wait a minute. We talked last week. I was going to say welcome back from the cruise, but I've talked to you since the cruise. And yes, you're off on another one, like in 2 weeks.
We're definitely got another one coming up. It's actually the second Scientific American cruise. We are going all over the place, basically out of Fort Lauderdale, so it won't be a nice long trip to Rome for me. And that's a good thing because my arm, although it's recovering, is still a little bit under the weather. But on the cruise, we're going out to Half Moon Cay, which I think you've been to, yes?
Yeah, that's the private island, right?
That's kind of cool, yeah, and St. Thomas. And a new report for me, I'm going to Rosso Dominica, which I haven't been to before, but it's way over there in the eastern end of the Caribbean. And then a couple of ports I've been to before, Curacao and Aruba. And oddly enough, Neil is getting off in Aruba. He is leaving me in charge for the final two sea days.
Oh, that's a big mistake, Neil. I've got to call Neil immediately and warn him.
The ironic part of this is that this will then mean that I actually have more Geek Cruise days than Neil does at the end of this cruise.
We're going to have to start calling you Captain Randall.
I think so. He's got to call me number one.
Number one. Make it so, number one.
Make it so.
Make it so. Neil Bauman is the guy who created the Geek Cruise, is now called Insight Cruises. And for good reason, because now it's broadening out into other educational fields like these Scientific American cruises, which have been hugely successful.
We've got a guy on there whose entire series of talks will be about baseball and physics.
Oh, I would love to see that.
Oh, it would be great. It's going to be incredible. When people talk about cosmology, astrophysics, healthcare, the surveying the science terrain, the catalyst of creativity. Ira Flatow, obviously.
Is he on the cruise? Oh, I love him.
Yes, he's on this one coming up. So I'm really looking forward to this. If you go to podcast.insightcruises.com, I will record as many of those programs as I can and put those in the next probably 4 to 6 months of feed. I've been feeding out the stuff from the last Scientific American cruise.
I've got a ton of it. Yeah. So who do we talk to today on? Before we do, how's your arm?
Oh, my arm. Since last week, I have a lot of progress to show. It turns out that pain that I was experiencing last time was because they had a pressure sleeve on my arm to prevent bloating in bad places.
That sounds painful. Yeah.
When I took the pressure sleeve off and replaced it with just a normal sock, basically, all the pain went away. So I could start wiggling my fingers and it wouldn't be a pain a half hour later. So I've made a lot of progress since then. I actually typed my first sentence using both hands yesterday. I tied my shoes today. It's starting to be, getting there. I'm picking up small objects with my left hand. I'm doing casual typing a little bit with my left hand, kind of hunt and peck, but at least getting that going. So it's getting better. And especially thank you to the audience for people. I had so many letters, so many people writing in. Say, wishing me well, people on Twitter wishing me well. If you want to follow me on Twitter to get minute-by-minute updates, it's twitter.com/Merlin. Not doing that to, aim for any kind of followers. No, I'm not in that kind of a game. But just, if you want to follow my medical updates, that's where they're going to be. And I also occasionally post, if you're a premier Twit member, I'm also posting from time to time on the forums about my medical status. So, but thank you, everybody, for that kind of follow. It's just been great.
I'm glad you're feeling better. That's
it's
that's
definitely been helpful. Yeah, thanks.
So who do we talk to today in the wonderful world of open source?
It's a really interesting conversation I think we're going to have. This is one of those that one person recommended it, and then he noticed he was actually listed, so he wrote back himself saying, Somebody says I need to be on the show.
I'd like to.
I love how that works. So that my list at twit.tv/floss is definitely working. We'll talk some more about that at the end of the show. But we have Joe Brockmeyer. He's going to kill me for saying that. Also known as Zonker. I have worked with him indirectly on a couple of projects. He was the editor-in-chief of Linux Magazine back when I was writing for them.
Neat.
But we haven't actually chatted, so this will be a great conversation. His claim to fame is that he is now working for Novell, working on the OpenSUSE community management relationship.
Wow.
So
for
all those Linux guys out there, this is your show.
Yeah, well, let's get Joe Zonker Brockmeyer on the line right now via Skype. As you know, I'm a SUSE fan. I love SUSE.
Very cool.
What is the difference in OpenSUSE and SUSE?
I don't know.
Well, let's find out. I mean, because SUSE, Novell owns the SUSE, bought SUSE. Here he is. Should we call you Zonker or Joe?
Zonker's fine.
Hey, Zonker. Welcome to Floss Weekly. I guess the first question I just asked as we were calling you up is, what's the difference between SUSE and OpenSUSE?
Okay, so the difference between SUSE and OpenSUSE, OpenSUSE is the two things, really. It's one, the distribution that we work on is a community distribution, and two, it's the project that creates the distribution, but also some other useful things like the OpenSUSE build service.
So it's not just a distribution, it's the entire project.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
And then the Novell owns, Novell bought SUSE. And has a commercial, I don't even know if you can call it commercial, but it sells a boxed distribution. Is that just plain old SUSE?
So we sell a boxed distribution actually based on OpenSUSE, and Novell supports SUSE Linux Enterprise.
Enterprise, okay. So is it kind of like Fedora versus Red Hat Enterprise?
That's probably, the closest analog.
Okay. But Novell continues to support the OpenSUSE community and the development too, I would imagine.
Yeah, a lot of the work that goes into SUSE Linux Enterprise is reflected in OpenSUSE and vice versa.
Yeah. Makes a lot of sense since they're getting a lot of benefit out of it. It's interesting.
Right.
By the way, good news. SCO owes Novell tons of money.
Yeah, I saw that.
Congratulations on finally putting SCO out of its misery. Jeez.
They still have a little bit of fight left in them, but yeah, we consider that pretty good news. I was happy to see that the judgment went our way there. They're probably going through their couch cushions madly looking for the money right now, but
This was only like, 7 years now, right? I mean, it's a huge, long thing.
I think about 5 years. I think it was 2003.
Oh,
in
man.
The internet, that's like 100 years.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
SCO claimed, hey, Unix, it's ours, not yours. Yeah. And it ended that there was stolen code, and it was, as far as I could tell, a completely specious argument. Novell's been awarded $2.5 million from SCO. And as you said, I don't know if SCO has the resources to even pay that at this point.
Mm.
Glad it's over. So what is the origin of SUSE? It was a German distribution originally, wasn't it?
Yeah. The name SUSE was actually an acronym that came out of Software und System Entwicklung, which meant software and system development. Well, still means that, obviously.
Unless German has changed.
Yeah, exactly. Which, as far as I know, it hasn't. No one's notified me if it has.
Okay.
But, yeah, it came from a German company which was bought by Novell in 2004. So the distribution has had a long history even before Novell became involved.
I'm a fan. I was always a fan of SUSE. A really nice distribution. Why did Novell pick that distribution as the one it wanted to acquire?
That you would probably have to ask people who are, as far as I know, maybe not even with the company anymore.
Right. You've only been with them 9 months.
Right.
Right.
I mean, probably the reason that SUSE was chosen has a lot to do with the quality of the distribution. It's always been very well respected. As being a very high quality, distribution. And I think that's probably what started the talks. And, SUSE has always had, or has had for a long time, a focus on bigger customers, and I think that was probably well aligned with Novell.
Right.
But that's probably a conversation other people would be able to have.
Well, let me ask you this then, given your longtime association with Linux as a journalist, with Linux Magazine and Linux.com and Weekly News, we talk all the time about distributions, but there, you know, every Linux distribution has at its heart the Linux kernel, which Linus Torvalds wrote, usually has a pretty thick layer of software from the Free Software Foundation on top of it. It will often have its own installer, its own kind of apt-get style way of adding new software. What distinguishes one from another? I mean, from somebody who's new to Linux, I think sometimes that's a barrier right there. Why would I pick SUSE over another distribution?
So that's a good question. That's something I was at the Google Mentor Summit for Summer of Code a few weeks ago, and we sat down several representatives from different distributions, and we talked a lot about that. And I think there's, number one, if we're talking about people who are completely new to Linux, you really need to explain the concept of Linux first.
Right.
You know, before you really get into the concept of what makes one version better than another. And what I always tell people, even since I've started working for Novell, all these distributions that most people are going to want to use are free to download and try. There's absolutely no barrier and no reason not to try them all. Even though I, you know, represent OpenSUSE, I don't discourage people from trying the others, right?
I think that's one thing that baffles people. I mean, you guys aren't competing with one another?
You know, we're competing for bragging rights, really, at the right. community level, but not so much for, you know, we all tend to agree that what we want is more people using Linux, and it's far too early for us to be looking at users of other distributions and saying, okay, you know, let's try to convince the Ubuntu guys to use OpenSUSE, or let's try to convince Fedora people to use OpenSUSE, as opposed to look at all the people who are unhappy with Vista, who, you know, might have a much better experience using OpenSUSE or another Linux distro. And that's better for the community and for the market, is if we can migrate those people to Linux and sort out which distribution they're using a little bit later.
You clearly haven't been to some of the open source conferences I've been to then. It gets a little polarized sometimes.
In the last year, I've been to just about all of them, it feels like. But, okay. But you know, and I was talking to someone else about this for another podcast yesterday, and they made a comment about throwing elbows, you know, and that's something the salespeople do at the enterprise level, but at the developer and the contributor level, not so much.
Yeah, clearly. Hey, what's the heritage of it, though? I mean, where did the pieces come from? Was this sort of like spontaneous, or was SUSE even derived from something earlier that we might recognize?
SUSE was originally based on Slackware Linux.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Ah, there we go.
That's the first Linux distro I ever tried to install and failed many times. That was a very early, if not the first distribution I can remember.
It wasn't the very first one. It is the oldest surviving one. There was a SLS, Soft Landing Systems, or something like that. There were a couple.
Yeah.
And you can actually still see some Slackware heritage in OpenSUSE and SUSE Linux Enterprise even today, in the naming of some of the package sets, as in, you know, AAA base and so forth.
Huh.
To talk about, you know, which packages make up the core system.
So does SUSE use a like an apt system for installing, or does it have its own, or how does that work?
So for the install, we use Yast. And
yet another software. What?
The acronym has been described in a number of ways. It's yet another system tool.
System tool.
Your awesome setup tool. You know, it depends on who's. I think there was a little marketing spin on that one.
Yeah, I think so. But that is a very nice way of installing software, I think. It does a very nice job.
It's similar to apt in that it's it understands overlapping files being not allowed and being able to uninstall things and understand versioning things.
Right. Well, Yast is the front end. The back end for that is called libzip. Okay. And we have a tool called Zipper, which is very similar to apt in a lot of ways. And yes, it recognizes those dependencies.
And it handles both source and binary distributions?
It will install source packages or binary packages, yeah.
Okay. So very similar to RPMs Debian packages then.
Right. Well, it is based on RPMs. So basically what we have is sort of an apt for RPM, which actually there was for a while, and I think there may still be a port out there somewhere. But, you know, this is a very, very nice front end for RPM management as opposed to some of the other systems, which tend to be a little slow.
So what do you have at the desktop level? Are we looking at GNOME, KDE, or some combination, or something else?
Pick your poison. If you grab the DVD, we have KDE 3.5 and 4. We have GNOME, and we have XFCE and some other popular window managers.
Oh, nice.
So we also offer two live CDs, so you can choose one with KDE or one with GNOME, which... those do an install, which is basically, for the experienced users, I recommend the DVD because you can go through and you can choose your software and customize it. For people who are a little newer to Linux, I recommend grabbing the GNOME Live CD or the KDE Live CD because it has a simpler installer that basically just says, here's your set of packages, and then you can add stuff later after the installer is finished.
One of my memories of SUSE is that it seemed to be one of the most complete distros I'd ever seen. I mean, everything in the box you'd ever want.
Yeah,
which I love.
And that's still true. We still have a very large selection of packages. That's right. Why we have the DVD.
Right.
So I'd find like OpenOffice on there already, for example.
Oh yeah, of course.
And all the good like Blender. Would Blender be in there?
I believe so. I haven't tried, and I haven't messed with Blender in a couple of years.
I'm just thinking back to all the shows we've done, trying to figure out everything we've talked about.
Well, it's easy enough to install them, and that's the thing. You know, there are so many distros out there, but you want to you kind of, if you're new to this, want to get one that has an installer like Yast that's well supported, or RPM or apt-get, mm-hmm. because it's much more likely that Blender will have a Yast version. And so even if it's not included on the DVD, it's much easier to install these things. That's the real advantage of going with a well-known distro like this.
What's the update schedule like on this? I know like Ubuntu is every 6 months, so you have something similar?
We tend to release between every 6 to 8 months, about 3 times every 2 years. We don't have a specific schedule. Our next release will be December 18th. We're scheduled for December 18th for the public release. Our last release was in June, so this one was about 6 months, and we're planning our next release, OpenSUSE 11.2, for July of next year. So roughly 6 to 8 months between releases.
How is the decision made about what goes into a release?
A lot of that previously, because OpenSUSE is a fairly new community project, a lot of the planning still tracks with what are we putting into the SUSE Linux Enterprise releases. One of the things that we're working on is finding ways to get the community more involved in that process, though, so that, you know, if there are features that the community really wants that may not track with the Enterprise version, we want to find ways to enable that.
So how's the Enterprise version driven? Do you have a committee there, or a single person sort of overseeing each release or something like that?
We have project managers. It's a fairly, fairly straightforward development process there, similar to any other enterprise version. And luckily, I don't get too deeply involved in that part. So,
do you ever find that because you have the commercial interest sort of in mind at that level, that the community is not necessarily, or sort of has to take a bit of a back seat, or does that ever come up in conflict?
It has come up a little bit, and there have been cases, I think, where we have, pursued the enterprise needs, and there have been cases, for example, with the KDE versions where we've pursued the community's needs. Hmm. I'm not sure how familiar you are, but KDE 3.5 and KDE 4, the transition has been a little controversial for a lot of users.
Okay.
And a lot of people really prefer the older version, and they don't feel that 4 is quite fully baked, or just simply prefer the older version because there's a distinct difference. I don't want to say it's better or worse, but there's a distinct difference between KDE 4 and 3.5.
There's a big set of API changes, if I recall.
Well, and interface changes, and I mean, it's very different. And they, you know, I think the KDE folks have some really great ideas that are reflected in KDE 4. Mm-hmm. But there are a lot of users who don't really like rapid change in their desktop experience, right?
Yeah, sure. So
we took into account the number of people using KDE 3.5. We did a survey. We, you know, had a lot of conversations on the OpenSUSE project list and ultimately determined to support and to put KDE 3.5 and 4.0 both on the DVD for this next release, even though a lot of other distributions have moved from 3.5 or have chosen, like Debian, not to yet ship 4.0 as a stable version. So we've actually put a lot of work into both, which is very community friendly, considering that our enterprise version focuses on GNOME rather than KDE mostly.
Okay.
So, obviously, that's, you know, an area where there's always a little bit of tension. And I like what my colleague Jono Bacon, he's a community manager for Ubuntu, as I'm sure you know. I like the way he puts it that this job is basically making sure that the community doesn't get screwed by the company and making sure that the company doesn't get screwed by the community.
Perfect.
That's a good balancing act.
Yeah, sure. Everybody's happy.
Right. Well, or everyone's equally unhappy. You know?
Yeah, either way.
Compromise.
Right.
So how would you contrast this with, say, I mean, so we've got two sort of primary models of other distros that that probably our audience is most familiar with. So we've got the Ubuntu model, which is sort of off there trying to be everybody in the world's desktop machine. And we've got the Red Hat, you know, free and commercial version. How would you position OpenSUSE compared to those two distributions? What's the biggest contrast point?
I think the biggest contrast point is probably in the tools. If you look at the management tools and things like that, and the partially the philosophy that drives them, you know, Fedora is very focused on being very leading and some might even say bleeding edge. We're very focused on stability. You know, basically OpenSUSE is the foundation for SUSE Linux Enterprise, which means that the SUSE Linux Enterprise releases are a little more polished and they're done with a mind towards supporting for like 5 to 7 years. We support our releases, the OpenSUSE releases, for 2 years. Mm-hmm. So we're still, you know, we still put out a retail box and we still have a strong eye towards quality and being a consumer ready distribution in that way. A lot of the differences really just are the approach and how the different communities think that people want to adopt open source software.
Okay.
So it's not so much in that, you know, the distributions are radically different, because if you look, you know, about 90% of the software that we ship is the same. We all ship OpenOffice, we all ship GNOME or KDE, you know, Evolution and all these other tools.
Do you have binary compatibility there?
Well, you have binary compatibility, at least in theory, but you might have different versions of libraries and things like that. And obviously, it's not trivial. It's not trivial to install an RPM on Ubuntu or dpackage or Debian-based packages on OpenSUSE.
Right, but it'd be a lot closer than say putting it on say FreeBSD or something.
Yeah, that's true. Now, one of the things we are doing that our community thinks is important is the OpenSUSE build service, which actually allows you to build packages for all the major distributions. Well, we have so the build service allows you to build packages. For example, you put the source code in the spec files, and we have a build system that allows you to create packages for OpenSUSE and SUSE Linux Enterprise, but also for versions of Fedora, Mandriva, and Ubuntu and Debian. And the purpose of that is we know that there are a lot of projects that, you know, simply don't have the time to maintain their own build system for all the different versions and all the different distributions. And we think that it's valuable to provide that service. So we have, you know, we provide that in a couple of forms. We have the hosted build service, which is the build service we actually use to create OpenSUSE, and people can also use publicly to create all those packages and host them. We also, the build service is open source, so people can download it. We actually have everything from small companies like OpenExchange to large companies like Dell and Intel using internal versions of the build service based on our code to do things like Moblin or support some of the packages that Dell uses or support builds for other distributions like OpenExchange does.
Oh, so if I had like a new text editor and I wanted to make sure it was available on most of the major Linux platforms, I could submit it to the OpenSUSE build server and it would be generated, packages be generated for all the major distros then.
Exactly. Yeah, you just supply the spec files and basically the build system does the rest of the work.
And you host that then as well, so people would download pointing at your servers?
Exactly, yeah.
Very cool. That's incredibly cool, actually.
And the other nice side effect it has for us is that the build service allows, say you're running SUSE Linux Enterprise Desktop 10, you can still build packages, newer versions of packages for that system, so you don't have to upgrade your desktop just to get the latest version of OpenOffice or Firefox.
Uh-huh.
So you can actually pull from the repositories there.
Now, I've been turning a lot of people on to Ubuntu as sort of their, you know, get them away from Windows, get them onto some Linux distro, and I've been pointing Ubuntu at them because for me, that's just been the most, you know, instant, easy to run sort of Linux. Can you tell me, that is OpenSUSE in the same category? Would I be able to hand my uncle a copy of OpenSUSE desktop and have him run with it, same way he could run with Ubuntu?
Yeah, absolutely. Give him one of the live CDs and let him run. I think that, you know, I've done installs from the live CDs that take about 20 minutes, and it's just dead simple now.
How about installing a dual boot system with an existing operating system?
That works too.
Yeah, that's a huge improvement in the Linux experience, I think, for newbies. Because, I mean, frankly, that's most people who want to try Linux don't want to get rid of their Windows install. And so the ability to kind of try a live CD, get a sense of, oh, I like this, push a button, then install it, and have it actually make something that coexists is fantastic.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people find that really valuable, at least while they're transitioning between Windows and Linux.
I mean, eventually we'd like them to get rid of Windows, but in the short term, it makes it an easier process.
Absolutely. But I mean, I know a lot of diehard free software supporters who still have to maintain a Windows partition for, say, their tax software that they have to boot up once or twice a year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Alas. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So what's the biggest challenges you're facing is in creating future versions of OpenSUSE and actually maybe if you can even speak to it, Linux in general?
So I think the biggest challenges before us, obviously drivers and multimedia are still, big hurdles for Linux in general. There still aren't really good video editing programs for Linux. There are some passable ones, but there aren't really good ones.
Why drivers? Is because we don't have specifications for the hardware that's being added now?
Exactly. I mean, Linux actually supports more devices and more hardware platforms than pretty much any other operating system out there, with the possible exception of NetBSD, which I think will run on a toaster at this point. Mm-hmm. But there are a lot of new devices coming out. You know, there are always new wireless cards and things like that that we don't have the specs for and take a while to create. Now, there is a driver project that the kernel folks are working on, in fact, led by Greg Kroah-Hartman, who works for Novell. Where basically there are kernel developers who will agree to sign NDAs to get the specs for hardware to write drivers if they can go ahead and write GPL drivers for the kernel. So we're, you know, it's not even something that vendors have to expend a lot of effort on. They just have to be willing to work with the community to support these things.
I understand that some problems with that are that if you write the software driver, you might drive the radios in the cards, for example, in ways that are outside FCC spec.
Oh, interesting.
Is that an issue still when writing these kinds of drivers?
I've heard that concern expressed. I don't think that that's a major hurdle. Obviously, Intel doesn't feel so, for example, because they have their wireless cards are now supported with, you know, in the kernel and so forth.
And they're not doing it with binary blobs. They're actually doing it by having source code available in OpenSUSE?
Yeah.
Wow, that's a step forward, because I think last I looked at this, there were at least a handful of vendors were still doing the binary blobs.
There are occasionally some firmware blobs, but they're fairly limited. And that's, you know, that's hopefully going to become a rarity at some point.
Yeah, I kind of wish it would all go away. I mean, I'm a real firm believer in open standards, open hardware. So it's really sad to me that we have to play these other games until we get there. And especially the deals that get made between hardware vendors and the people in Redmond to be able to have a card that would only work with Windows then and can't work with open platforms.
Right. Now, you asked what challenges we had. I would say there's one other one, and our biggest one right now is actually marketing. It's not a technical hurdle so much as, you know, and getting the understanding about Linux out. There's sort of a reality distortion field when you work in this industry. You think that everybody's heard of Linux and knows what it is.
No.
No. If you start talking to people, you know, I've traveled about 50% of the time this year since I took this job. And so I spend quite an enormous amount of time in planes and in airports. And, you know, when I'm on a plane or I'm in an airport working on my laptop and I use the CompIz effects to do something, usually when there's somebody within eyeshot, you know, they want to know what the heck am I running and get into these conversations about what is Linux and everything. And it's very clear to me that, you know, most people have no idea what it is. Exactly. And they certainly don't understand the differences versus Windows or macOS.
They're barely at the point where they're starting to realize that there's apples out there. So the fact that Linux still has even probably a smaller market share is not surprising.
Yeah. And so then you look at the fact that while there's a great broad industry support for Linux, there's not a great broad industry support for advertising Linux.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, you know,
obviously Red Hat's made some strides in this. Has Novell been doing some work in, like, the, you know, getting at least a page or two glossy ads in magazines from time to time?
Well, we certainly advertise our enterprise products, but Novell itself isn't a consumer company, so they don't, for example, you know, we don't advertise the retail boxes widely as, you know, Apple would or somebody like that.
Is NetWare still a part of Novell's product line? I mean,
not so much. I mean, basically, as I understand it, and again, this is, I don't play with the enterprise products that often. But we're supporting NetWare on top of Xen on top of our Linux platform.
Makes sense. That makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. So
you have to have it for legacy support, but
correct. Yeah.
Yeah.
So how are you achieving the challenge? How are you addressing this challenge of getting Linux more well known?
Well, that's part of my job, actually, in going out and speaking about it and, you know, finding new areas to push out and drive more contributions and drive more users and adoption. But really, you know, there's only so much that particular problem. There's really only so much that our project can bite off. That's going to have to be something that a larger group of people tackle, and something that I've been talking to a number of other distributions and people in the industry about is kind of a dairy council idea, is to find some way where multiple vendors can get together and find ways to advertise Linux.
And milk it.
And, well, yeah, there you go.
That was bad, Randall.
You haven't listened to these shows before, Joe, I know, but every one I have to do one bad pun. So that was my bad pun for the show. All right, so go.
You're saying Linux, it's what's for dinner. That kind of thing. Yeah.
Milk the penguin or
milk
something.
Milk the penguin.
Can you
milk penguins? I bet you can, actually.
They're birds.
Yeah. You know, you can't milk birds?
No, you can milk mammals, not birds.
Oh, of course
you
not.
You can, but the results are not good.
They're not what you want, not what you're looking for.
I can just see the poster for that. So Joe, you're speaking to a fairly large audience. What could people listening to this show do to further what you're trying to get to?
Well, I'd say people listening to this show, if they're not using Linux now, obviously the first step would be download it and use it themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And our most effective advertising to date has been word of mouth and people actually, you know, getting into the community and helping support their friends and family moving to Linux. Mm-hmm. But I would ask people to be a little bit cautious about that. Make sure that if you're advocating Linux to somebody that it will suit their needs. I mean, don't replace Linux on your grandma's computer if her primary, shuffleboard program only runs on Windows, right? You want somebody to have a good experience with Linux, so make sure that whatever you do, you're prepared to A, replace the programs that they're using with open source or free software equivalents, and B, be prepared for the inevitable support calls. Because yeah. if you advocate it to certain people, you're going to be doing tech support for, you know, a period of time.
You're really saying be a Linux ambassador.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
And be the genius bar, because there isn't an equivalent for that like there is for Apple stuff. So
exactly.
You have to be the genius bar for that. So Zonker, how did you get into OpenSUSE, and what did you do before that?
So I got into OpenSUSE. I mean, I've used various distributions over the years off and on. Mm-hmm. Before I joined Novell, I worked, I was editor-in-chief of Linux Magazine when I joined Novell. And before that, for about the last 9 years, I've worked as a journalist or editor covering Linux and open source software in one form or another, either as a freelancer or full-time as an editor and writer.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I've gotten into this. I started using Linux about 12 years ago with Slackware, and it just kind of snowballed. I was actually a journalism and English student when I discovered Linux, and it's too late to go back and change to computer science.
You weren't a geek yet.
Well, I was a geek, but I was more of a lit geek.
Geek. That's a whole nother kind of geek.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. So, but you didn't come from a technical background per se.
No, I pretty much I had a beat up 486 and then a Pentium Classic, as they're referred to now, and just decided I wanted to teach myself Unix, as it were, and found Slackware, cool. Which was close enough.
Yeah. And I have to say, you may not have considered yourself a technical geek at the time, but anybody who was able to install Slackware gets a lot of deserves some points. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, I have to give Patrick a little bit of credit, actually. And, you know, to people who are into Linux here, I want to, you know, kind of just a little anecdote real quick. When I started using Linux, I had problems getting my X up and running. And so,
as we all did, that's pretty normal.
Pretty common.
In those days.
And there was a support email on the back of the 4CD set. So I just sent an email saying, you know, here's my problem that I've diagnosed this far, and this is as far as I could get. And I got an email back from Patrick Volkerding.
Wow.
Saying, you know, well, this card, you know, is now supported, but it wasn't when that was released. Here's the file that you need. Here's what you need to do to install it.
Wow.
And there are so many people in the community who would ignore an email or wouldn't necessarily be all that friendly. But my first interaction was so positive that really, you know, and I got a response from the guy whose name was on the CD. I didn't realize what a small company it was at the time.
Mm.
And so I was just, you know, blown away by the fact that he'd personally respond to an email, and he was so polite and nice about it.
That's something I think we've forgotten as open source and Linux have matured, is that really makes a big difference. That look it got Zonker into the fold. There's a certain amount of snootiness from the experts towards newbies that it would really do to drop, because boy, you get those people involved and you enroll them as supporters. That's what it's going to take to get open source and Linux to take off.
And I think that varies from project to project, Leo. I think there's definitely some projects where, you know, the Dictator for Life is still very active in the community and engaged in the community. And then there's other projects where the, the
well, you're not going to get an email from Mark Shuttleworth if you can't get X working.
No,
on Ubuntu.
Or Leo, or Larry Wall is probably right. not going to respond personally anymore.
That's okay. I mean, I don't think it has to be from Patrick Volkerding, but I think getting a response from somebody who gives you a good answer, that makes a big difference, because really that ultimately is what's going to make somebody choose open source is service, is support, mm-hmm. is, you know, and that's really the negative, I think, right now for a lot of people is, I don't know what to do next, and I can't get anybody to help me.
And you can't. It's not like a commercial product where you can demand, you know, to be in the queue for a couple of hours on hold. You know, but at least you know you're in a queue.
Right.
You know, you can't demand that anywhere. And so having that kind of open source support, is that one of your goals, Zonker, to make sure that OpenSUSE is viewed that way?
Well, we've certainly worked on providing avenues of support and to address that. What you said just there, you know. You can't demand things. There certainly are people who do so. You know, you get emails all the time. You know, if you want me to switch to this, you must do this. And I would say that while I recommend to advocates of Linux that they are very polite and outgoing and gracious, and at the same time, if you are new to the community and you would like support, please pursue the proper avenues. You know, don't send an email to Linus if you need support with something. Mm-hmm. Send it to the appropriate support. You know, almost every distribution and project has a user group list, a user list or a forum or both where you can send those questions. Make sure you're not just spamming the world, you know, because you may get, you know, there are people who only want to do development and they may get a little cranky when they get the 50th email demanding support, right?
Yeah.
But at the same time, for the OpenSUSE project, we are doing a number of things. For example, we launched Unified Forums in June, and we now have 15,000 people signed up for those.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I'm sorry, we launched that in July. June was the 11.0 launch. And there are other things that we're doing, creating an as yet unnamed, but I guess ambassador program would be the best way to put it, to, you know, help run events and other things locally to work. We're not trying to take over Linux user groups. We want to work with them. We don't want necessarily SUSE user groups that are only specific to us. What we want to do is work with the existing user groups where they are and support more local events and get more feet on the ground to help people get started with OpenSUSE.
So rather than a collection of, say, specific SUSE user groups, you'd rather just sort of be Linux user groups and just be one of the aspects of that.
Exactly. I'd rather have, you know, if you're an OpenSUSE supporter and you happen to live in an area that has a Linux user group, I'd rather you work with that larger group than try to establish something separate. I think it's important to work with the other communities very closely.
Because the similarities are much closer than the differences would be for the most part.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, absolutely.
But speaking of that, do you have like OpenSUSE national, international conferences?
We are planning an OpenSUSE conference for September 2009, and that'll be our first major conference. Now, that'll be aimed at contributors.
Okay.
We're also going to participate in the Linux Foundation's LinuxCon that's going to be also fall of 2009, I think, later in September.
Yeah. Where's your conference at?
That we're still determining. It will almost certainly be in Europe this year because we still have such a large user and contributor base in Europe.
Okay.
But we will probably want to have at least a one-day conference aside the LinuxCon as well for people in North America who don't happen to have the cash to travel to Europe casually.
Yeah, I also presume you have like IRC channels and stuff. Do you hang out on IRC at all?
Yeah, we absolutely do. There's an OpenSUSE project channel for discussions about the project itself. And then there's also a SUSE channel for people who want support. And all of this is on the OpenSUSE website. And, you know, you can easily find all these links and everything. And we have, if you prefer forums, if you prefer mailing lists, if you prefer IRC, those are all supported.
Nice. So basically covering all the bases there. And have you monitored the quality of support in those channels? Is it generally friendly?
I would say it's generally friendly. There's always, it's an open system, right? So there's always the opportunity for someone to come in who's maybe less than friendly, but as a rule, I would characterize it as friendly.
Okay, that's nice. Very cool. Very cool.
Socker, we're so glad you could join us to talk about this. You know, you've been obviously an advocate of Linux ever since you stopped being a lit wonk. And but it's nice to have somebody who can speak English to be the advocate. You think you're going to stay working on this side of the game for a while, or do you miss being in the as a journalist?
Well, that's
journalism is a disease. It gets in your blood, you know.
Uh-huh. I tend to refer to myself as a non-practicing journalist rather than a former one.
Exactly.
But I think I'll be with this for a while, yeah.
Good. Yeah, I remember briefly when in my 30s, I got the notion, you know, I should really have a real job instead of working on the radio. And I tried that for a few months, and it didn't work out so well. once you get the used to having people listen to what you have to say, it's kind of hard to stop.
I got to ask, though, the origin of your nickname, is that the obvious?
Yeah, from the Doonesbury character, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think that's what Randall was talking about, but then...
No, it was.
He was talking more about your habits. Oh, okay, good. All right. I thought it might have something to do with his, you know, his partying.
And then why?
Yet from Doonesbury, that Zonker is the lead character.
And then why? Why Zonker?
So it was just a pseudonym I picked for an underground paper I worked on in my early college years.
Uh-huh.
So, and it's stuck. Yeah.
What college? Yeah.
This was East Central Community College in Missouri.
Plenty of Zonkers there, I understand, but
yeah, not one. So,
hey Zonker, really good to talk to you, and keep up the good work with the SUSE, Open SUSE. I think it's just a great distro, and it's one of the top one or two distros I always recommend, and it's important, I think, that people, you know, make the outreach and really consider new users and get them using it.
Well, I appreciate you having me on. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Socker. Take care.
You too.
Bye-bye.
All right. Bye.
You know, I'm glad we did some Linux, because I think that, you know, this show is about open source, which includes Linux, but many Linux folks think that Linux is open source.
All of open source. You know, and I've had that argument frequently with thank you guys for writing from home. Thank you for writing me and giving me suggestions about the show. I really appreciate that. It's really helping me decide where to take this show, what to talk about, you know, very important. I really appreciate the feedback and the community effort that this show has been and the benefit that we all get from that. But, you know, I really got to say, for all the people that keep saying, why aren't there more Linux things? It's because if you've listened to the last 47 of these shows, you know that there's a huge world out there that isn't correlated one-to-one with Linux.
Now, you're sounding a little angry.
Yeah,
we love Linux. It's okay.
Linux is great. Linux is great, and it's not the entire open source world.
And I have to point out that for many of us, and I include myself, Linux was the first open source project we listened to. You know, we didn't ask him about the license. I understand they're changing the license with the next version. And I meant to ask him about that.
Well, I'm sure that's all detailed on the website, so people that are interested will have to just go check it out. Yes,
the new open SUSE is coming out very soon.
Speaking of coming out very soon, Leo,
I am not coming out.
Your birthday, and I've got to say happy birthday, Leo.
I'm very secretive about it. I don't like celebrating it, and the older I get, the less I like celebrating
But since I mentioned my birthday last week, thought I had to mention your birthday, since we do have exactly a week apart, and you're a full deck now, a whole 52.
I am indeed. 52.
Slightly older than me. She'll always be my elder advisor, so I have to respect the elders on here. I know. Crazy stuff.
Oh.
And I understand, we didn't talk about this at the beginning of the show, but I understand you're going with me on an upcoming cruise.
I'm excited. Mac Mania 9's coming. I just sent Neil my, he asked me for some suggestions for what I might want to talk about. We've settled on 4 lectures, which is more than I usually do. 4 lectures in 6 days is a lot. But I'm going to do 60 iPhone apps in 60 minutes.
Mm,
I
wonderful.
Like the idea of going fast.
Yes.
So boom, 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 boom. And, you know, you just mentioned that you had, 222 apps on your iPhone?
I have 450 apps downloaded and about 100 installed.
So 60 is not hard.
60 is not hard. And you definitely need to get Vinci installed on your jailbroken iPhone.
Oh, I didn't talk about jailbreaks. I was just talking about exist.
I know, but the point of Vinci is that you can actually show your phone on your laptop.
Oh, I might have to break it just so I can show these apps.
Or you can borrow it, because I probably have a superset of what you have installed.
You probably do.
Always use mine.
But whenever iPhone users get together, that's the first question. What's good? What's new? And exactly. By the time we go on this cruise, which is July 9th through the 18th, 9th through the...
That's only 6 days, so it's going to be something... But somewhere in the
15th.
Yes. July.
it's later than the 9th, because I know I'm going on the land portion July 3rd,
right.
And that's a week. So you're right, July 9th or 10th, you're right.
13th. And
is it the 13th? You know what? We could solve this by going to insightcruises.com and find out.
Yes, I'm sure it's on the website. Yes.
So then we'll do the traditional Mac gems. We always do this, the best freeware and shareware apps. But again, I'm going to do 60 and 60.
Okay. And that's the one that I'll have to give up then. But that's fine. I'll gladly give
up. Oh, he didn't tell me that you were going to do that.
I said last week, I said that's the one I took over from you, which is the Mac gems. So,
well, I'm not going to do podcasting. You can have that.
I'll do podcasting. I'll just keep quoting you. You know, you got to sit in the room and you got to like heckle me on that.
You're wrong, Randall. I'm also going to do, and this will be kind of fun and new, the new world of social media. I'm going to talk about using Facebook and Twitter and Friend Feed.
You are the expert on that.
To learn, to socialize, to market yourself, to build an audience. So that will be an interesting expose on social media. And then finally, and you can help me with this one too, turning your Mac Mini into a media center. So the hardware and software that you might want to use your Mac Mini for watching TV. Hello? He's speechless. I think he hung up on me. He's so mad at me for taking over his class. Let's get Randall back. You're so mad at me for doing Mac Gens. You hung up on me, aren't you?
No, you hung up on me, man.
I did?
You're so excited talking about whatever you're talking about.
Did I slap something?
I don't know.
Maybe I did. I could be. I could have been pulled the plug. Anyway, okay. And did you hear that I'm going to do turning your Mac Mini into a media center?
Yeah, and you asked me about that. You said that you're going to... I can't help you with that because I haven't done that.
Hmm.
I don't have a Mac Mini. I don't even have a media center. I'm never home. Why would I need all that?
Oh, you did. That's why you need it. So you could, record all the shows you're missing.
I've got that TiVo thing instead.
Oh, this is better. This is better than a TiVo. Anyway, well, so I'll show you the hardware and the software how to do that. So that'll be fun. Wait, if it works out. What are you talking about? Are you thinking we're not going to go?
No, it sounds like fun. It's only fun that, putting Apple TV modded with Boxy and stuff on it should be a really good setup.
Yeah, Boxy.
Right?
I'll show Boxy
already. So.
I'm doing it right now. I'm looking at it right now, and it's really a fabulous. I use an Apple TV. I'll bring the Apple TV along and show that as well. And hacking the Apple TV that'll be kind of the easy step. But then I will also show how to take a Mac Mini. I think because the Mini is a full computer, the hacking of that is even more interesting. So you don't have to be a Mac fanatic, but it certainly helps. Mac Mania 9. From insightcruises.com, the old Geek Cruises. In fact, you can still go to geekcruises.com.
Yeah, just directs you to Insight. It's fine. It works
if it's easier
ways.
To remember.
Yeah.
And Mac Mania 9 is coming up. We are so excited, and we would love it if you would go with us. Randall and I would love to have you along.
And Andy and Don
McAllister.
Don McAllister.
It's a really good group of people. If you've never done one of these Geek Cruises, partly it's the lectures, partly it's people like Andy and Randall and Don and myself talking about what we know and sharing. But the thing is, we're there all through the cruise. So it's a chance to socialize with, usually around 100 Mac fanatics and have the best vacation of your life. I love the idea of going on a vacation where I see things, I travel, but I also learn things. And this is kind of the best of both worlds. It's always a lot of fun.
And it's so cool because, on this last cruise, over half the people were alumni, people
Isn't
that have
that
gone on cruises before. That's just how good it is because people just keep coming back. And this is people that got themselves all the way over to Europe. Most of them American got themselves over to Europe to go through this cruise. It's incredible.
Well, you might want to, these fill up fast. So, and it is in July. So if you are going, you better get going to Insight Cruises and sign up right now.
There's rumors also of Mac 10 being out of Rio up and down the South American coast.
Can I go on that one?
smile nicely and Neil will let you go.
I'd love. Well, you're the Brazil expert. I can't go to Rio without my Randall.
Well, you know, it's funny because we actually had two alternate dates. One would be roughly near Carnival, and unfortunately, he chose the November date instead.
That's fine.
But yeah,
that's
almost fine. Was going to be April 10, which would have been right near Carnival, which would have been really bizarre. But anyway, well, it's fine. It's okay. Just wanted to also bring up last week's show. I really enjoyed last week's show and the feedback I've gotten on MyFos, the micro financial stuff. The feedback you guys are sending from home show that this show really touched a lot of you in terms of really seeing the value of open source and really seeing the contribution that it could be to actually making a real difference in people's lives. And I just wanted to kind of send, you know, tell you back as a collective whole that I got that too from, you know, participating in the show. And it was just a treat to be able to do that kind of show. And I'm looking forward to, you know, letting the stars align correctly and have some more shows like that in the future. And speaking of future shows, between last week and this week, I started doing my January bookings. So we have on the list, if you go to twit.tv/floss, you'll see that we have next week, Peter Sinandre on XMPP. But new to the confirmed list, we have Jeff Squires talking about OpenMPI, which is the multiprocessor, multi-programming something. Anyway, it allows many, many computers to all work on the same product and get data back and forth really nicely. So that'll be really cool. And on January 7th, looks like we're going to have Daniel Stenberg on the curl application, curl and libcurl. People are using that a lot for downloading stuff from the command line, and also a lot of other applications use it to be able to go out and hit websites, stuff like that. So we're going to talk to Dan Stenberg.
I use curl all the time.
Yeah, and on Jan 21, we've got Chuck Sapirsky and Jian Zhang, I'm probably mispronouncing that, sorry, on the fog cloning system. So people that want to ghost their disk and make a separate copy of it, we'll be talking with them about that.
It's an open source ghost.
Yeah, and so and Jan 28 just booked this one. Quim Gill, who works for Nokia, about MAMO, Nokia's operating system, talking about making open source software for the Nokia phones.
Wow, you've got a great lineup.
Yep.
And that answers the question. Anybody who says open source is Linux, it is everything on the face of the earth, and it's not even just for computers anymore. It's everywhere.
And on the real short list, we've got Stefan Lindberg of XBMC. We're just trying to put him in a slot. And also somebody yet to be named talking about ZFS, the new compression file system.
Oh, I'm very interested in that.
Like RAID file system. So we're those are both on short list. Probably one of those will go in Jan 14, and maybe one of those will go the first booking in February or something. But
we're going to see ZFS on Snow Leopard, I understand. That's I think it's Sun created it, did they not?
Yeah, Sun created it, and we have a representative from Sun that's going to be talking to us. They're sort of community representative about that. I've been running ZFS on Leopard. There's a download that lets me play with it. So I've actually built some ZFS partitions and been playing with it. And I thought about putting it with my Drobo, but it turns out that the Drobo people actually say, no, that's exactly the opposite of what you want to do. I'm not quite sure why, but I'm looking into that. But ZFS has some really interesting properties. Very, very cool stuff.
File systems are not often paid much attention to, but they're such a critical part of this, of the computer, that I really think we should talk a little bit about it. That'll be fascinating.
As another element on the short list, let's see if I've got his name right in front of me here. Yeah, Peter Honeyman. He's working on NFS, the network file system. So he's also on the short list. But I know him mostly because he created the old UUCP, which is how the Unix systems talked back and forth over 300 baud modems back in the early day.
Wow, that's history.
And we can go geeky with him because he's back in the early days with us.
We can go way geeky.
So looking forward to that show as well. That's coming up again on the short list. So again, if you want to send in suggestions, you go to twit.tv/floss. There's the link there.
Spreadsheet's right there. It's a Google spreadsheet. You can follow it along.
Spreadsheet. You can follow it right on. And or if you want to send me suggestions, my email address is there. Also, if you want to hire me for Perl or Smalltalk related things, that would be the email address. I have a couple of slots left in January, and I'm willing to sell them cheap because I need to move them fast. So
I never thought of it that way.
But if I have time, if I can push them, I have resources, I'm willing to sell them. So let's make it work.
That's Randall's at stonehenge.com for more information. And we'll see you next time on Floss Weekly. Have a great weekend, and I know, are we doing it next week?
Happy Thanksgiving, and we are doing it next week. Next week is Peter Sinandre.
Oh, that's right. I'm very, very excited about that. See you then for XMPP. Bye-bye, Randall.